informative, and engaging. Rick Munn. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Rick Munn. And in my final hour, I have the pleasure of being joined by a guy who I admit I don't know a whole lot about, bar what I have seen on his social media, his Twitter page. His name is Matt Izzo. I'm just going to give you a little bit of background on how I connected with him and why I connected with him. And then I want to pass over to Matt and he can introduce himself and tell us as much or as little about his background as he likes. It was actually a picture of you, Matt, that struck me. If you go to his Twitter page, which is at Matt Izzo, and if I got the name right, it's Izzo, yeah?
Yep, that's right.
Right, so it's Matt Izzo at Matt Izzo on Twitter. The first thing you'll see is he has a pinned tweet. And on the pinned tweet, he has four photographs where he progressively transformed. Well, you can see a transformation and a physical transformation in his body from being someone who was very overweight to someone who's now a triathlete and a coach, a physical and a lifestyle coach. But it was actually your first. The first picture that I saw of you was struck me more than the final picture where you're running across a finish line from a triathlete event with your arms raised in victory. You're lean, you're fit, you're happy. It wasn't actually that that hit me. It was your first picture where you were very obese and you were smiling in it, but you weren't a happy guy. And the reason why I connected with that was me also at one point in my life. I had gained a lot of weight over a long time, and I was at the point in my life where if I didn't make a change, I was going to die. Basically, the doctor said, if you don't sort yourself out, you could be dead in 2 years. You're the trajectory that you're on. So it was your first picture that hit me. And then I said, what's this guy about? And then I seen you transform. And I thought to myself, well, this show that we have here is a current affairs show, and I discussed this with you beforehand. I'm not going to talk about politics or war or COVID or anything like that. I want to maximize this short time that I have with you this morning to talk about health, how you can get healthy, how you can develop good habits, how you can eat cleaner, how you can better your life without spending a lot of money or, you know, traveling around the world. So that's the background to how I was drawn to Matt's page. It's something that resonated within me. And I also feel that it will be beneficial for the people that have tuned in this morning to hear what he has to say. So first of all, welcome to Matt. Welcome, Matt, to the show. And if you can, in as many or as few words, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're all about.
Thanks for having me, Rick. You hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, my friend. Yep.
Great. Yeah, so I mean, I've been on a long kind of struggle against obesity. You know, something that plagued me for over 25 years of my life. And, you know, it was really challenging for me to overcome that. I've lost the same 75 pounds three times now. You know, the first two times I ended up, you know, kind of quickly gaining the weight back again. And now for the third time, which, you know, started in my mid-30s, I've now kept the weight off for over 4 years. So that's been great. And, you know, I just kind of kept going with it and transformed myself into a triathlete, like you saw on my page.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know the cycle that you were in of perpetually gaining and losing weight. And again, I'm going to speak openly. I mean, like, this is a conversation between two guys who share some experiences in life. There could be someone listening in today. I'm hoping there's someone listening in today that's also saying, that's me. That's my life. That's what I'm dealing with. And maybe, like I said, what you say, or maybe something of what I say could spur someone into taking some kind of positive action. So I was the same from I was a kid. From a very young age, my weight has cycled. I don't know what I've gained and lost over the years. It's literally hundreds and hundreds of pounds over the last 48 years. But when I hit that spot in 2010, it was actually, I'll tell you the date, it was the 15th of June, 2010. I was 263 pounds. I'm only 5'7". So it's heavy, you know, it's like a heavier than a heavyweight boxer in a 5'7" frame. I was very unhealthy. I was very sedentary. I was dealing with stress through eating. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I didn't do drugs. But my medication was, or at least my dealing mechanism at the time was to eat And then when I ate, I became more self-conscious. It was gaining weight, so I didn't exercise. And it was just a vicious circle that I found myself in. Like you said, you know, you'd up and down, up and down, up and down. And in the past, I had done the same. I'd gained and lost weight successfully. When I gained it, I could lose it, but then I gained it and I lost it because, you know, maybe I wasn't dealing with the root problem, which was causing me to eat. It wasn't hunger and it wasn't enjoyment. I was doing it to deal with other issues. And I noticed you had said the same thing. You're very much, it's not just a case of, you know, you must eat clean and you must exercise. And there's reasons why people go down a certain route. For example, a cycle of obesity. Is that what you found also?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I often say that I thought for the longest time I hated myself because I was fat, but it turned out that I hated myself and I was fat, right? Yeah, so being a visual person, right, I saw the fatness and, you know, as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, right, being the fat kid was still kind of rare, right? So yeah. it definitely, it felt to me like I was excluded because I was fat. And, you know, that was what seemed to be the most obvious answer. I had a painful childhood in a lot of ways. I sought comfort through eating, you know, eating sweets, things like that, got yep. fat from it, you know, so really at the root of my problem, and I think at the root of most people's obesity or overweight issues, is an emotional problem, right? And mm-hmm. it's one thing to do the mechanics of weight loss, right? That's fairly straightforward. You know, you eat less and you move more over a long enough period of time and you're yeah. going to lose weight. But obviously the actual solution is much more complicated than that, because so many people struggle with this. And, you know, it really at the root of it, it's an emotional problem, and it's down to how you feel and how you treat food and how you use that food to medicate yourself and try to manage your emotions with that.
So basically, I think, let me try and summarize what you've just said so I can get a handle on what you've just said. If you are looking at the mirror, if you are in the position whereby you're not happy with your body, you know you're not healthy, it's not just a case of saying, okay, I need to eat less and move more. You know, no one, and some people say, oh, I'm happy with my body. It's not a nice place to be in when your clothes don't fit and your belt doesn't close and you don't want to be in a photograph, or you have to wear oversized clothes. You can't be, you know what I'm saying? No one's happy with that situation, and people are self-conscious. And it's not a case of, okay, I need to join a gym and I'll get a trainer and everything will be okay if I just starve myself a little. You're not dealing with the reason why you're acting that way in the first place. And if you don't get to the root problem and deal with the root problem, it's like a weed, you know, a weed in your garden. You can go and pull the weed out, you know, just cut the top off, like when you're cutting the grass, but the roots are still there. And then you come back tomorrow and there's another one back in its place. Unless you root out the source of the problem, I think it's just, you get into that perpetual cycle that you talked about. And it's a perpetual cycle that I was in for an awful long time until I was like 40 years of age, or sorry, 30, 37, 38. I started to sort myself out a little bit. And, you know, it took me that long. Also, just a lot of failed attempts because I wasn't dealing with the root source of the problem. So, you know, I think, you know, you would encourage a bit of introspection and maybe talking or figuring out why you're doing that rather than just simply going to the gym. Yeah.
Yeah. Things that have really helped me are meditation and journaling, you know, really mm-hmm. helping me gain control over my mind, my thoughts, my emotions, and then, you know, exploring some of the things from my past, particularly things that I would see as traumatic or painful memories, right? Writing about that, you know, feeling those feelings, you know, and not yep. just suppressing or repressing them, you know, and then letting them go. And I also found that by examining these things, I was able to find a lot of value in these things that I saw as traumatic events, right? You know, there's yep. always a silver lining. These lessons are always teaching us, you know, whether or not we listen is one thing. You might have to learn that same lesson dozens, if not hundreds of times, right? That's just the way it works sometimes. But I can go back and I can think about all these things in my life that have caused me pain, and I can see it from a different perspective now. And you know, that's really helped me kind of move on from using willpower to address my weight problem, which was how I did it for the longest time, right? It was all about willpower. And yeah, that can work for short periods of time. It worked for me for short periods of time. But ultimately, when your willpower gives in, that's when your self-image takes over. And that's when you start to, again, behave in accordance with what your self-image is. And if you have not taken the steps to address that, if you're not in a supportive environment of people who are going to support you changing and evolving your self-image, right, which is so often the case with, I'll say, workplaces and, you know, maybe bitter family members or even bitter friends who aren't really supportive of you, that can all seriously derail you and cause you to just kind of slide back into those old habits, those old thought patterns, those old behaviors, and lead to that weight coming back on.
It's a bit like, when you deal with the issues and then you make that decision to take a step forward to say, okay, I'm going to do something about this. It's okay to identify the issues, but then you need to act. And it's not okay just acting unless you identify the issue. So it's two things that go hand in hand. You need to get to the root cause of the reason why you're in that cycle. And at that point, then you need to take action. And if you can do that, and do that over a period of time. In fact, your bio on the Twitter page, and I'm just going to use this as a basis to talk about. You're about sustainable fat loss. Okay, so it's not crash dieting, or you can lose 20 pounds in 4 weeks and be shredded. All that. No, you need to change your lifestyle. You can't do that overnight. You can't do that in a few weeks' time. It could take years, but you need to do it progressively. And to keep it off long term. And then you mentioned about developing healthy habits and lifestyles. And if we can just look at this business of habits, you know, we've just passed January 1st. Usually that's, you know, everyone says, what's your New Year's resolution? I'm going to get fit. I'm going to cut out the garbage. I'm going to eat healthy. And everyone starts, you know, and does okay for maybe a day or two. By the 4th of January, 5th, maybe someone has, I'm going to have some pizza. I'm not going out for a walk today. And then by the end of the month, you know, people have just lapsed back into their old routines. Habit development and habit formation is something that, you know, the hardest part, for example, for me, when I started to run, it wasn't enjoyable because it was too heavy. It hurt my joints, et cetera. I walked a lot, but I wanted to try and take it to the next step. And I didn't want to go running the roads and, you know, bouncing along the roads and hurting my joints. And I was puffing and panting. It was an unpleasant experience. But for me, the hardest part of a run was to get off the couch and walk out the door. See, as soon as I walked out the door, that was psychologically, I had broke the back of that thing that was keeping me in place. It's easier to sit on the sofa. It doesn't matter if it's raining outside. Just get up, pull on your shoes. And once you cross the threshold of the door, in my experience, that was the hard part over. The physical side of things was secondary. It's a mental thing. You know, you need to motivate yourself mentally. And if you can get into a habit, and usually a habit takes, you know, say 30 to 60 days of repeated repetition. So maybe you can't go out running every day because, you know, a joint, you need to rest, but you can do low impact stuff like, well, okay, I'm going to exercise every single day. That may be a walk around the block. That may be just walking to the grocery store to pick up some milk rather than driving there. I'm just going to do something to be active. So then you get into the formation of an active habit. And I think that's what a lot of people do. They quit early and they don't give it enough time, and they can never develop habits, which is what is ultimately going to make them reach their goals in the long term. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, everybody's looking for a quick fix, but it's just not something that happens with a quick fix, right? If I look back at my own journey, it really started with getting a Fitbit for Christmas in 2013. And then I started walking 10,000 steps every day kind of after that. I ended up walking 10,000 or more steps every day for 7.5 years. This was at like the foundation of what I did, but I still didn't lose weight for another 2.5 years from when I started walking the 10,000 steps every day, because, you know, diet really controls that sort of weight. But, you know, getting outside and walking every day, setting a goal, reaching a goal, you know, it's not that challenging to walk 10,000 steps. It would usually be an extra hour per day of me walking, depending on how much activity I was getting in my normal day-to-day kind of thing. But you know, really just getting outside, getting out in the sun is a huge thing. You know that provides so many great nutrients for us. You know, that'll help raise your energy, and that'll help you, you know, just feel better about yourself, get some movement in, especially for someone who's overweight. The last thing you want to be doing is taking up running or anything like that. It's all about moving the body in ways that are sustainable, ways that make you feel good, you know, and then just building these habits. And it's going to take time. But what I always say is this time is going to pass either way, right? When I sat down to actually lose the weight in September of 2016, I knew it would take me about 9 months to lose the 75 pounds because, you know, I had done it before. So I was pretty good at it actually once I got my mind right. And I knew that it would take me until, you know, the end of May 2017 to lose this weight. And yeah, standing there, it seemed kind of daunting, right? Like, oh, wow, that's 9 months. That's going to be a lot of unpleasant days, a lot of days where I'm hungry, right? But I realized that time is going to pass either way, right? It's going to be May of 2017 anyway. And then when it is, where do I want to be, right? Do I want to have actually put in the work, have solved my problem, or at least got a long ways towards solving my problem? Or do I want to still be in the same place that I am, or even getting worse, right? And just kind of putting it off and keep ignoring it and keep pretending like it's not a problem. So that was what really helped me a lot, was knowing that, you know, this time is going to pass either way. And, you know, it's, what am I going to do about it? You know, what action can I take right now in this moment to put me in a better place in the future?
So basically when you started off, and like I said, I'm hoping there's people that are listening, not, this isn't going to apply to everybody, obviously, but my belief is no matter what you talk about on a show or what you put out on a tweet, you hope someone somewhere will identify with it and take some kind of a benefit from it. So when you started off in September 2016, you had a realistic time frame to say, okay, it's going to take me at least 9 months. So you're realistic about your goal and you knew that it was achievable. A lot of people set goals that are they're not that you shouldn't dream big and you shouldn't believe that you can achieve anything you like, but you know, the goals should be, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time bound, that old SMART analogy. But it's true. So if you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you think, right, I need to lose 100 pounds, there's no point in saying I'm going to do it in a month and that's a realistic time frame. You need to get real, and also you need to have an idea of what your end goal is. And even that 75 pounds, it could be, okay, that's phase one. After I get to that phase, I might want to drop down. If you want to rip physique, I want to get down to 10% body fat. That could take me another 6 months and it will require adjustments in my diet. If you measure out and you sit down and you mentioned journaling, if you sit down with an empty notebook, it doesn't have to be anything technical, and just say, okay, today's date is such and such. My goal is to lose 75 pounds. Realistically, it's going to take me 9 months. And then what am I going to do? How am I going to make that happen? Is it just going to happen by me sitting here? Is it going to happen by me just cutting out pizza? No. A lot of people also have found, and myself, when I started to lose weight in 2010, I dropped pretty much half my body weight. I went down from 263 down to as low as 155. That was a combination of diet and exercise over 3 years. But the mistake that I made early was not realizing that you can't out exercise a bad diet. So I would go out on a 10K run on a, you know, longer, come back in, burned up around, you know, 600-800 calories, because I was journalizing this too. Then you'd be really, really hungry. And instead of going and eating something healthy, I would have said, well, you know, I've done a 6 mile run, a 10K run. It's late at night. I can't be bothered preparing a stir fry. I don't want to chop vegetables. I've earned a pizza. I've earned a large pizza. There's 1200 calories in the pizza. There's 850 calories in the run. So effectively, you know, the caloric balance was actually a bit better sitting at home, really. And I know obviously when you exercise, it benefits your body, but from a goal point of view, I actually would have been better doing no exercise and just avoiding the pizza. That's a mistake. That's a trap I fell into.
It's you know, it comes down to how we, you know, feel about ourselves. Sitting at home and not eating isn't exciting for us. You know, this is going to be a change, you know, and this is where, I did this by eating six small frequent meals, every day. A lot of people now will talk about the benefits of fasting and stuff. If I'm being honest, either approach can work for weight loss, right? This is a small detail. Yeah. But one of the things I've learned from fasting, which I've done more kind of in the last year or so, is it's good that you can build up that muscle, I'll say, to overcome your hunger. And you realize being hungry is not the end of the world, right? And it comes in waves. So, just like any other urge or any other thing that we feel, if we just, acknowledge it and let it go, it's going to go away again, and what you talk about with pushing yourself to physical extremes, specifically when you're not in good shape, you're overweight, the last thing you should be doing is going out, running long distances. It is going to be murder on your body. And it's not going to be a sustainable practice for you, but that's kind of getting into the reward thing, right? You set a goal, you do the run, you achieve the run, you feel good about yourself, and then you get a reward with the pizza, right? So this is a strategy you're taking on as opposed to just sitting there and not eating, right?
But exactly.
Just sitting there and not eating would actually have been a more effective strategy for the weight loss, but it just doesn't provide you any of that dopamine or any of that feedback that you get from going out, doing the run, overcoming that, and then getting the food in it, right? So I think that's a big thing for people to overcome.
Or let me add a little bit to what you've just said, which is great. That's a fantastic point. It's not a case of pizza's an evil thing or the occasional candy bar is an evil thing. But if you're coming home from a run, and say, okay, I'm going to have a big slice of pizza and leave it at that, that's a bonus. That satiates your appetite. That gives you that dopamine rush. You've achieved something. But a lot of people will leave and say, well, I'm starving. When you're not starving, you're simply hungry, and you'll overeat and justify it to yourself by saying, well, I've earned this big feed, rather than saying, okay, I feel like I need something that'll give me a lift and it'll give me a little reward. So I'll go and have a small pizza rather than a large one with extra cheese and double pepperoni, even the toppings on your food. Your portion size is crucial. And, by swapping off the pepperoni and just getting, sliced peppers on there, you're cutting down the fat content of that pizza. You're cutting down, the unhealthy elements of that pizza. So it's even a case of fine tuning what you're eating and how much you're eating, rather than saying, I have to deprive myself of the things that I love to eat. Did you find that too? Were you didn't restrict yourself per se to say, well, if I feel like the occasional treat, I'm going to take it, but I'm not going to let it become a habit. And, realize that some days you're going to be stronger than others mentally. And, it's not something to beat yourself up over if you fall off the wagon for a day.
Yeah, and that's definitely right. If you fall off the wagon, the thing you got to do is just get back on it and pretend like it never happened. That's one of the hardest parts, right? Because if you screw up and you make some missteps and you feel bad about yourself, and then you start to think about yourself in self-deprecating ways, right? Feeling bad about what you did and that stuff. But in my own personal journey, I didn't think there was a lot of benefits to having cheat meals, cheat days, and that kind of stuff. I was really focused on reaching my goal. But, what I did do was take aside the notion that I can eat intuitively, that I can just kind of figure out what to eat, right? Because we're all marketed to, right, by these companies, and they're engineering these foods that are super appealing to us, so they're not healthy, right? If you're overweight or obese, you can't eat intuitively. You don't have that ability now. What you need to do is use your analytical brain to think about and decide what to eat, rather than just eating what you feel like, and then work on building up that ability to do that over the weeks, months, and years as you teach yourself about it. But you should start by doing your research, learning, and thinking about what to eat, and not just eating what you feel like.
Yeah, and then that will in turn develop healthy habitual eating habits, lifestyle changes, which feeds into the sustainability that you're trying to encourage people to have, rather than it just being a flash event. Matt, we've got a 2-minute ad break coming up here. I hope if people are listening to this today, they're taking some pointers and they're being challenged to maybe examine their own lifestyles in a good way, not in a judgmental way, in a good way, and that good things can come of it. So don't go away. We're live here on TNT Radio. You're listening to Rick Munn and Matt Izzo. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go away.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
It was a Thursday, 11 years ago.
I can't remember saying goodbye to her.
The last thing I ever said to her was, I love you.
There'd been an accident.
Unfortunately, your mum's been killed.
She died of head injuries.
Somebody had been arrested and he'd been on his phone.
I grew up like 10 years in a second.
Everything died on that day because that man decided to pick up his phone.
There's nothing that is so important it cannot wait. Don't use your phone whilst you're driving.
The bushfire was so unpredictable, it was important to have a plan.
We stayed up to date with our phones and the radio. We knew it was coming.
I never thought it would actually happen. I'm glad we had a plan.
You have to prepare your property and your family.
Always had a plan.
We can all be bushfire ready. Do your 5-minute bushfire plan today.
I will be right by your side.
Women can have it all, including heart attacks. But symptoms like jaw pain, nausea, unusual fatigue, dizziness, and backache are often different and more subtle than for a man. The fact is, heart disease is the number one killer of women. Know the signs. Learn more at GetHeartChecked.org. From Women's Heart Alliance, in partnership with Women Heart.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the show. I'm talking this morning with, this morning, US and UK time. It'll be evening Aussie time with my colleague Matt Izzo from America. It's very early in the morning his time, and I appreciate him getting up to do this interview. And on the basis of the topic of getting up, I want to talk about sleep. Okay, Matt. Sleep is something that I don't feel enough people get enough sleep. I'm one of them. I'm holding my hands up. I'm not being a hypocrite here. I'm preaching about getting more sleep, and I don't get enough sleep myself. How important is sleep in all of this business of sustainable weight loss and body composition?
Extraordinarily important. You know, sleep is, I think sleep is one of the most important habits for everyone, regardless of your fitness or health goals. You know, it's one of these things that all animals sleep, right? And if sleep wasn't needed, it would be a huge evolutionary advantage for animals not to have to do it. So obviously, yep, from that, you can deduce that it's doing some really important things. What I would suggest for everyone is take your day and figure out how you can get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, however much sleep it is you need. Figure that out first and then build your time around that, because that's really how important it is. I think a lot of people, you know, do it backwards and they'll try to figure out, oh, well, when can I sleep? You know, when can I squeeze it in? And, you know, that's not a great way to do it. I go to bed really early, you know, so, you know, I'm in bed at 9:30 every night. That's not great, but, you know, it's worth it to you know, be rested every day and fully repaired, fully recovered. That's where the weight loss happens. That's where your muscles rebuild from the gym, things like that. But, you know, I would think one of the most important things you can do to fix your sleep, and I'll try to give your listeners a very actionable tip, is to fix your circadian biology. And the way you can do that is by getting some sun exposure early in the morning. Get outside, AM sunrise. That's going to set your circadian clock properly. Mm-hmm. You know, even just 5 or 10 minutes outside in the morning with the AM sunrise. And then avoid the screens before bed, the blue light from the screens, those sort of things. I wear blue blocking glasses after sunset here. And I find that provides tremendous benefits for my sleep and then kind of monitoring that circadian rhythm in my body. So I am able to have a restful night's sleep every night. And, you know, all that stuff is taken care of just by getting that AM sun exposure and keeping my light environment good at home.
And in a way, I'm listening to what you're saying, and you said, you know, you're in bed by 9:30. No joke. I don't think I've been in bed at 9:30 since I've been like 5 years of age, right? And that's not a good thing, by the way. I'm just saying, I know it's a bad thing. And strangely enough, when this sleep business is a part of the whole package of a better lifestyle, a healthier lifestyle mentally and physically, and that can help you to achieve your own body goals, whatever those goals are, be that's an individual thing for whoever's listening. Okay. You don't have to be a certain weight. You don't have to be a certain level of fitness, but if you're starting from any base, if you can just simply improve your health, even a little bit, it's an accomplishment and it's going to serve you better in the long run. So this business of sleep, strangely enough, when you're sleeping, obviously you're not doing anything. And people think, well, this, you know, if I want to drop 100 pounds, I need to be moving. I need to be, you know, that actually the parts where you're not moving or the parts where you're asleep is as much a foundation block of that goal as when you're running the roads or you're on that bike or you're swimming or you're running up a hill backwards, as you do as well. I've noticed that as well. Yeah. So yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar with boxing, but there was a great boxer from the 80s called Marvin Hagler. He was a middleweight champion, and one of the key parts of his training regime was running backwards. So when he would do a 10 mile run, he would run backwards. When he was running up a hill, he would run backwards, and then he would run up forwards. It was part of the building blocks of his training schedule. So obviously not everyone wants to do that, but if it works for you, it works for him, then it can be incorporated. So sleep is actually, if you sat down with a piece of paper and you broke your day down into 24 hours, you would pencil off from 9:30 till like 5 a.m. or whatever it happens to be. That's sleep. That's non-negotiable. And then you work backwards from your sleep and you say, right, now, what can I fit into my waking hours? Is that your approach?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, I used to stay up later watching television and stuff, and it's just not, it's not worth it.
It's a waste of time.
And again, as I learn more about, we'll say, quantum biology and the importance of sunlight and sun exposure and just what looking at the screens does for us, right? It when you're looking at these screens at night, it's basically sending your eye, your brain, a signal that it's solar noon. So you're staring at the screen up until, some people even in bed, right? They'll have their phone or this. Like I don't have any of this stuff in my bedroom. There's no television. Yeah. I don't bring my phone in there. But you know, if you're lying in your bed staring at your phone and it's basically telling your brain it's noon, it's noon, it's noon, you turn it off, you close your eyes. Well, it's no shock that you're going to have a hard time falling asleep at that point because your circadian rhythm isn't set right. And you know, we're not designed to be in this light environment, right? We're only designed to be under the sun and exposed to the sorts of frequencies that the sun emits. And now in our modern world, we have all this other stuff, and this really screws us up from a circadian kind of perspective. And this is what is a big obstacle in people's sleep.
It's also important to note, it's the going to bed with a phone in your hand is not a good idea. Not simply even because of the fact that you're messing up your body clock and the circadian rhythm, but also, let's face it, what are people looking at before they try and sleep? They're scanning social media, they're scanning Facebook, they're listening to people backbiting each other, they're reading news articles about death, destruction, violence, corruption. If you go on the news, it's not good news. It should be called the bad news, because that's all, bad news is what people want to hear, whether they will admit to that or not. So not only are you feeding your eyes these rays that are messing up your body clock, but you're also feeding your brain a data garbage before you try and go to sleep. And then when people wake up as well, and again, I can hold my hands up and get this morning, heavens above, I woke up this morning and I went, shit, right, I've got to get up and do this. You switch on the phone, or not even switch it on, it's always on because the alarm's on it and it's at hand. You roll out of bed, you pick up the phone, and the first thing people do then is they flip that thing open and either switch off an alarm or say, oh, who's been texting me? Who's been sending me messages? What happened last night with this? What happened? Let me check the news. What's going to happen? So not only are you doing it last thing at night, but a lot of people are starting their day with that same diet of garbage, which can't be a good start to the day.
No, and it's going to give you negative energy, right? And I'll kind of transition this to talk about another topic of mine that I think is a great tip for people. It's using your social media feed effectively to improve your life rather than getting involved in all sorts of BS that people like to get caught up in, right? I'll see it myself. I'll send a tweet out, and a week later, there's going to be strangers arguing with each other about some minor point and just going back and forth arguing. And I'm like, I want to interject and be like, don't you people have better things to do with your life? Why are you wasting your time arguing with this random stranger on the internet? Who cares, right? Like if the people you're following on social media aren't helping you get better, you should probably unfollow them because they're exposing you to this. So one of the things I did was I built my Twitter feed and I said, I want to follow people who inspire me, right? So the people on Twitter that I interact with that I look to for inspiration, that I talk to, right? They're fighter pilots, they're Iron Men, they're world record holding weightlifters, right? These are the sort of people that I'm getting my sort of motivation from, that I'm getting my energy from, and I've built relationships with. And these are the sort of people that I don't meet much in my day-to-day life. So what I've done is I've taken my social media addiction and I figured out, well, how can I use this to benefit me and improve me? And that's what I've done. So on my feed, there's no negativity. There's none of this stuff. I have all the COVID words are muted. I'll say I don't want to see any of it. I still see a ton of it, even with all the words muted, right? So if anything important happens, trust me, I'm not going to miss it, right? But, you know, I don't want to subject myself to reading about this for 12 hours every day because I'm trying to have my mind in different places and think productively and build relationships with people.
That's refreshing. And again, this wasn't, obviously, we had no agenda here today. The only agenda we agreed on was we don't talk about COVID. Yeah. We don't talk about politics. But ironically, even by simply discussing phone usage, this crap seeps its way into the conversation, albeit we're making people aware that this is a very negative thing for you to have in your life. And again, you know, whether or not you've tuned in here to hear health advice or dietary tips or how to develop good habits, this is another habit that I feel leads into bad lifestyle changes and bad dietary choices, because you could be saying, right, I need to eat. Okay, it's 4 p.m. I need to be thinking about preparing my dinner or whatever. And if you're not prepared in advance, and that's something else we can discuss as food preparation in advance,
which helps maintain discipline. It's like, okay, you're on the sofa, you flip open that phone, you start your messages. It's like, oh, it's almost five now and I still haven't made the dinner. And instead of going out into the kitchen, setting the phone down, chopping up some vegetables, you know, frying up or doing whatever you need to do to eat your dinner, it's like, you know, I'll just get a takeaway tonight because it's just so much easier. I don't have time to prepare it. So this social media toxin, I think, and I'm again, fallen down to it, it's just not something that's conducive to a healthy lifestyle. And to cut out the garbage from your feed is absolutely a great suggestion. So if you're listening to this and you're following people who are just controversial for the sake of controversy, or they're just pumping you full of a diet of negativity, it's best, like excess body fat, if you can trim as much of that off as you possibly can, it will lead to a better life in the long run.
Yeah, and you know, you're never going to convince a stranger on Twitter that they're wrong and you're right. You're really just wasting your time with that. I would suggest using the block button liberally, because you know people will sometimes try to engage with me, and I'll think about, should I block this person or should I engage with them? Maybe try and have them see my perspective. And every time I choose to engage with them and have them see my perspective, I find I end up blocking them after a few messages anyway, because it's just not how it works. And it's nothing personal. It's just not a good use of my energy. And I'm very careful with how I spend my energy, and I don't want to spend it on people who just want to be argumentative for the sake of being argumentative.
You make a great point also in that, and it's a philosophy that I have myself. You and I, if we meet for the first time, like today, if I'm not buying into what you're saying, you can talk till you're blue in the face. I'm going to go away and ignore it all because I'm just not buying into it. And by the same token, if I try and sit with you today and say, Matt, you shouldn't be going to bed so early. You should check out social media as soon as you wake up. You should cut back on the exercise. Forget about the morning and the evening sun. You're not going to go away and say, okay, I'm going to implement that into my life, because you're far enough down the line that you know what works for you and you know your own mind. So engaging in me trying to change you when, you know, you have no desire to change and you're perfectly happy with the way that you are, it's completely futile. And as you say, there's so much tit for tat, wasted time during the day that you could be doing something good, even sitting in a dark room with your eyes closed, meditating, thinking about things and calming down. People are worked up. They're waiting for a reply. They're waiting for the next chapter in the saga of fighting online. It really is it's a terrible habit to be in, and it is a cycle that needs to be broken as much as a poor dad cycle, I would say.
Yeah, I posted a tweet that was kind of disparaging toward oat milk the other day, and somebody tried to engage me in a conversation with it. And then it was a Sunday. I didn't respond to him for a few hours. They sent me another tweet back basically being like, huh, you're not going to respond to me now? You're going to ignore me? And I'm like, I don't owe you anything. Like exactly. What are you talking about? Like they just want to fight. So it's just block this person, move on. Let me find somebody else who is receptive to my message, right? Somebody who is looking to change, right? And I'll find that person rather than trying to convince someone else that they're wrong, because it's going to be unsuccessful. I can tell you that.
I can say, if you check out Matt's Twitter feed, I don't use any other social media platforms apart from Twitter. And I use it because of I've ended up doing this now. This is now my new occupation. So I have to, unfortunately, use it because it helps me get this is a current affairs show. So I can't come on in the morning and not talk about or be ginned up with what's going on in the world. That's a blessing and a curse. Okay. This for me, this gig is an absolute blessing. But the flip side is we're talking about things that are not particularly productive or enlightening to discuss. But I do have an element where I can dictate my program. So therefore, I have a vision and a goal to have people like yourself on at least once a week, if, you know, slots in the show to be filled with people that, okay, we're zoning out from all this external noise. We're going to take a deep breath. We're going to say, right, how can we examine ourselves, make ourselves better, filthier, fitter or happier. So that's the reason why I got you on here today. So what advice would you give? I mean, like we've covered things generally here. We talked about diet, we've talked about exercise, we've talked about sleep, we've talked about social media, and indirectly we've been talking about stress, which is brought on by excess social media or lack of sleep or, you know, lifestyle choices that we've made. Preparation. Okay. I know you prep your food in advance. And like I said, Matt's channels on Twitter's at Matt Izzo, IZZO. And I can vouch he doesn't have any nonsense on the channel. He talks about what he's been eating, shows us what he's been eating, how he can prep in advance, getting up in the morning, getting sunlight first thing, switching off, setting yourself apart from any negativity. It's actually a relaxing space to go to. I don't follow a lot of people on Twitter, like 69 or something. I never did. And the few that I have followed, I like to just spend a little bit of time there and chill out on certain people's pages. And I know if I go to your page, I know I'm not going to be worked up whenever I come back off it again, because there's no BS on there.
Yeah, you know, I try to keep my message open for everyone, right? Like, I don't want to get too political. I don't want to get too into these issues, because I think at the end of the day, the vast majority of people want the same things, right? And we might we might disagree about the best way to get there, right? But I think getting healthier, raising your energy, feeling better about yourself, you know, being happy, feeling gratitude, right? Bringing that into your friends, your family, your coworkers, right? These are all things that we can all do that will all make the world a better place. And, you know, you can put politics aside and, you know, maybe there's a small fringe who doesn't want that or whatever, that we'll leave them over there, right? But for the rest of us, for the 95, 98% of the rest of the people, this is what we want, you know? And so I try to make my message open to everyone, you know, and at the same time, right. I believe in certain things like freedom and things like that. I'm not going to shy away from that, but you know, I want this to be a message that everyone can say, look, you can make yourself healthier. You can make yourself happier. You can decouple from some of this stress, right? It's not that challenging to do. There's some simple things that you can do that can move the needle in the short term and start making you feel better. And that's what I want for everyone, regardless if we think the same things politically or not. Because at the end of the day, we just want to be healthy, happy, and see the best things happen for ourselves and our family and our communities.
So what are your we're into January 2022 on a personal level, then, you know, there's goals that you've achieved, there's goals that you've set, there's goals that you've achieved, there's things that you've maintained. What's on the books for you this year?
Oh, I'm hoping to complete an Ironman this year, a full distance Ironman. So that's, I have not officially signed up for it yet, but that's what my goal for the year is.
And explain to anyone that's not aware, a full distance Ironman involves what?
It's a 140.6 mile race. So it's a 2.4 mile swim followed by a 112 mile bike ride and then a marathon, a 26.2 mile run. Yeah.
So to top it all off, you start off jumping in the water and swimming for 2.5 miles. Then you've like 100-odd mile bike ride, which is a long way. And then when you finish the bike ride, then you pull on your running shoes and you do a full marathon. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And when do you envision, or when do you foresee doing that? Should you decide to go through with that this year? Is it like 9 months away or what?
Yeah, it's in, the race I'm targeting is in November. And so I had just done a half distance race. So a race that was half of those distances. I did that back in September. And, you know, since then I ran a couple half marathons, but I've been kind of taking it easy. You know, I'll talk about the importance of setting your goals, right? And you talked about the SMART goals. Putting a date on the calendar is a great way to stay focused on that goal. But at the same time, I'm at a stage right now where I'm enjoying not having a date on the calendar, because I know that once I pay the $800 or whatever it costs to do the Ironman, I'm going to be locked in. And, you know, I've got to focus supremely on that. So, but before I do that, you know, I'm enjoying a bit of I'll say freedom. You know, it's, I don't want people to think it's got to all be 100% pedal to the metal all the time. Right. You know, one of the things I've learned is we need to be our coaches, you know, and we need to learn when to hold ourselves accountable, when to be compassionate to ourselves, when to be kind to ourselves, when to push ourselves, when we need structure, when we need less structure, right? And these are all going to change at different seasons of our life.
The goal setting as well. I mean, like, let me use one example from my own life. You have a goal to complete a full Ironman triathlon. You know what training will be involved, you know, the time scale, you know, the stress that'll be put on your body. You know, there's also different ways you could achieve a goal by doing it. Number one, it could be to simply complete it. Okay, that could be your goal. Your goal could be to win it, or your goal could be to do it, say, within a certain time. I've done one half marathon, and it took me, I'd say that was the second year I was dropping the weight, at which point I'd become pretty fit, pretty lean. But a half marathon's a big jump from a 5K, you know, and a 10K is a big jump from a 5K, you know, and so on up the scale. So I had when I entered that race, it was a large race in my town that happens every June. And there's usually about like 5,000-6,000 people will do it from all over the country that come and they run this race. So my goal was to complete the race in under 2 hours. If I didn't care if I came last, I didn't care if I fell over and injured. I just, my goal was to do it sub 2 hours. That was my personal goal. There were people running that race to win it. There were people running that race simply to finish the course. That's their goal. My goal was to win or to get in and under two hours. Now, if I had won the half marathon, but did it in 2 hours and 5 minutes, I would have viewed that as a failure. Okay. Yeah. Or if I'd simply completed the course. So my goal was that, and I'll never forget it. This is going back, a lot of years ago, but I did it in 1 hour, 58 minutes and 43 seconds. So it was 77 seconds inside that goal of mine, but the goal was achieved. And that made me feel incredible, not because I finished the course or not because I ran longer than I'd ever ran before, but because I had personally decided on my goal and I was working towards my goal, I achieved it. And it's the greatest feeling ever. You know, you'll attest to that. When you set a personal goal, not a goal someone else tells you need to achieve or some standard that you need to achieve, you set your goals, you set your boundaries, you set your targets. And when you achieve them, it doesn't matter if no one else even knows about it. It just makes you feel so good and it inspires you, I think, to continue on that path. So I hope you do enter that. It's a big commitment. And as you say, you're locked in pretty much for 9 months because you realize, well, this is going to involve a lot of training. This is a real step up here, you know, past anything maybe you've ever done. So you have to be able to commit to that. But it has to be fun too, because if it becomes a chore, it becomes torture. And then if it becomes torture, your mind, it becomes counterproductive, I think, if you don't enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, it's all about enjoying the training. That's the key. You know, I'm going to spend a lot of hours training for it, and you know, you have to be able to enjoy the process of getting better, pushing myself. You know, doing new things. I have a very similar half marathon story to yours, right? I had a sub 2 hour goal for my first ever half marathon. I did it there in like 150. I think I did it in 154. It was the longest run of my life at that time.
Yes.
It felt incredible. And then I went back 2 years later, ran that same race again, and I did it 12 minutes faster. Right. So these goals can keep evolving depending on what our overall goals are. Right. You know, and that's what you need to. You can't just reach a goal and say, all right, that's it. I'm done. I did it, because that's never going to keep us satisfied. You know, it's a cliche, but it's the journey. It's not the destination, because you're going to find that once you reach the goal, you'll feel good for a little bit and then it's over. And then you're back to your life. And then you got to figure something else out, or else you're going to be lost and you're going to start drifting again.
Yeah. As soon as you complete a goal, the secret is, you know, whether or not you do it straight away or not, it's up to you, but you need to be working towards something, because if you're not, then you get into this routine of just sedentary and sort of directionless living. And when you're directionless in your goals, or you haven't anything that you're working towards, you just get into a rut. And then when you get into a rut, a lot of people get depressed, and then they resort to the like of eating and, you know, not moving, and then they get into this vicious cycle that results in, you know, unhealthy choices. But it's been, we're pretty much out of time here. Actually, the news is coming on in a minute. In case I get cut off, I want to thank you so much, Matt, for coming on this morning. I hope actually we can get you on, maybe if you're free sometime, we could get you on semi-regular, just to pep people up, dispense with some information and knowledge. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed this slot as well. I think it's been great to talk to you, and I'll send you through a pic of me crossing the line at that half marathon. There was someone there to take a photograph of it, but it's uncanny that you mentioned your own story. So thank you very much for sharing that, Matt, and thank you for taking the time for coming on here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it, and I'd love to come back and, you know, share my story and some healthy habits to help out your listeners.
We'll make sure we make it happen. We'll stay in touch, okay?
Sure.